This is CliffCentral.com.
It is time for us to turn our attention to more important things. It is also entirely appropriate that the man who was debating the finance minister on TV last night is here to help us understand the political situation in South Africa. I'm talking about Justice Malala. I'm talking about the Burning Platform brought to you by Nando's. And here he is. Good morning, Justice. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. I saw you debating Pravin Gordhan yesterday, as if he didn't have enough trouble.
Oh, man. I must say, I have to give it to him. Despite all the stuff that they throw at him, he's still there. He's still fighting the good fight. You've got to admire that, I think. And I'm a big fan, I have to say. It's quite something, you know. You know, I think what's happening in South Africa with this particular case is so deplorable, Gareth. It's so shocking. And I'm fully with some of the people who are saying today they're going to march on the hawks to just ask a few tough questions about exactly what crime fighters about. Is it about... Are they joking? Is this really happening in South Africa that the finance minister is essentially keeps on being harassed and his people keep on being harassed? And now probably the most efficient institution in South Africa, the National Treasury, is living in fear. It's just amazing. It's incredible that we're in this period. And once again, you know, when these things happen, where is the president of South Africa when the currency is being smashed?
Do we know?
At the 9-12 days.
Where is he? Because he's been very quiet after the elections.
Yeah, I think we had to chat a bit about this the other day. But basically, he pitched up in Nkandla. He said his voting and his voters' magical abilities, it's going to replicate itself. Well, that didn't work out too well because the ANC lost Nkandla municipality. So that was essentially we saw him and it was, oh, the president's around. Then at the IEC, he gives his speech. Those four activists stand up and say, remember Kwesi. And that was the last we've seen of him. He's had a four-day meeting with the NEC of the ANC, where after 4 days, they come out and say, oh, you know, we are all responsible for the losses we've suffered, and it's okay, Jacob Zuma's going nowhere. Now, that is the only body that could have held him accountable, but it didn't. Then he goes on to another four-day meeting with his cabinet, the cabinet Lekota, and they come out and guess the decision, the big decision that they have made. They have decided that he will form a committee which will report to him, which brings together all the state-owned enterprises under one wing and one person, and that's President Jacob Zuma, which makes you wonder, do you think the problems at SAA, which still hasn't given the Minister of Finance its financials or accounted in any way, are going to be solved? I don't think those problems are going to be solved at all. I made this quip to the minister yesterday that essentially they've taken the keys to the liquor cabinet and given them to the drunk uncle. He's going to go nuts.
All right, Justice, let's try, as hard as it may be, let's try to imagine that the president means well. Let's try to imagine that maybe Pravin has a couple of skeletons in his cupboard. I mean, the allegations from the Hawks are quite ridiculous. But for a minute, let's say there were some staff shenanigans and he gave someone early retirement, which I'm sure has happened in every corporation in the world at some point, and then rehired the guy because he was so good at his job and he couldn't find a better person to do it. Is that something worth chasing down the minister for? Because that's what the Hawks are saying is one of the reasons they're looking into him. The other reason they say they're looking into him is because he has been setting up rogue units, which are there to investigate tax dodgers, which is exactly what SARS is there to do, and which government department isn't empowered to start a you know, covert unit to check on things that are being done illegally.
Yeah, that's a good way to start. So it's worth going back last year on this show where we discussed an article written by one of the best political journalists around, Ranjani Muniswamy, who wrote about a meeting at which Jacob Zuma spoke. The meeting was in Mahikeng at the NIA, it's the spy school, apparently. That's where they teach you how to bug people and follow them and catch the bad guys.
Right.
It's James Bond school, our little James Bond school. So the meeting takes place. All the heads of any type of investigative unit in South Africa or any body that has investigative powers under the state is present. At that meeting, Jacob Zuma says, we need a unit in SARS that would investigate and work with other units. So they all go back to their offices. Pravin says, you heard the president, we need something like this to investigate and so forth and so forth. Mm-hmm. No one does anything about it. The law exists for SARS to set up a unit of this nature. And so what do you know?
They were following orders. They were following orders.
So if Benning Dlamini, who, as we must always point out, lied to Judge Matuja near the Pretoria High Court not once, not twice, but several times, under oath, on the stand, if Benning Dlamini wants to investigate Pravin Gordhan for setting up that rogue unit, because the two issues that are mentioned in the letter to him are two, interception of communications. By the way, the hiring and firing and rehiring of Ivan Pillay is not mentioned in these present yourself things. It's essentially that you ran an illegal spy unit and you participated in the interception of communications, which is essentially what they're doing to you and me on our phones right now.
Yes.
So if that is the case, the person who gave the order for this to be established must also be investigated.
That would be the president. So Benning Dlamini has got himself into an ugly little situation here that he's probably not aware of.
Because he's got to start being even-handed about it if he says Pravin broke the law.
Right.
So that's the first thing. Then there's the whole murky, you know, the tobacco industry was being investigated and not being investigated and so forth and so forth. This is what happens in a case, and maybe some laws were broken and so forth. Maybe they should go for those guys. But quite frankly, in my view, the re-emergence of all these things that Pravin did while he was the commissioner at SARS points to one and only one reason why they're happening.
It's because there
are things we don't know about what Pravin did between 2009 and 2014 when he was the finance minister. And I think the things that he did was to say no to wanton looting in the state. The SOEs, government expenditure in the departments, essentially, and this is becoming clearer and clearer to me now, essentially the Jacob Zuma administration and Jacob Zuma and some of the people around him started early on in 2009 saying, we should have access to this, we should get that. The allegations made by Temba Maseko, the former head of GCIS, about how the Guptas called him and said, push government advertising towards us. We need it now. We're launching the New Age newspaper. I think all those things were happening right from the start. And many of them were stopped by Treasury. Because remember, Treasury has to sign off on many of these major spending issues. items. And therefore, in 2014, when the chance came to get rid of this guy, President Zuma got rid of him. But he didn't realize that Nhlanhla Nene is exactly the same type, the same kind of person who will say, no way are we giving another bailout to SAA and so forth.
And one can understand. One can understand the president's mistake. There are very few honest people in politics, but he just happened to have the bad luck of having two in a row.
what a bit of bad luck for him.
Yeah.
Because then Nhlanhla Nene did exactly the same thing, stopped the same things, and he had to get rid of him. So he got rid of him, but now you've got the rand is tanking, the banking shares are falling, CEOs are jumping up and down saying, what are you doing to my retirement? What are you doing to my money? Pensioners are saying, oh, I'll be begging at the street corner because I won't have a pension because of your actions. So he's forced to find someone who is credible.
Right.
People are saying to him, this is in December now, bring Nhlanhla Nene back. He goes begging. You remember it was Opri Machiki who told us that he has it on very good authority that President Zuma went back to Nhlanhla Nene saying, please, my brother, come back. And Nhlanhla Nene said, no, you promised me a job at BRICS, and I want that job now.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't go back. By the way, we mustn't forget to point out that the president was lying in his teeth, through his teeth, by saying that there's a job for Nhlanhla Nene at BRICS Bank. Because here we are, 8 months later, where's the job? As the young people say, dololo job.
Now,
anyway,
Justice, I just want to quickly, while we're still on this topic, point something out. I mean, if Pravin Gordhan is someone being targeted in this witch hunt by the administration who wish to capture the state, let's imagine worst case scenario, that's absolutely true. Isn't it remarkable how little Pravin Gordhan must have done in a bad sense while Commissioner of SARS, how clean his record is that they have to struggle so hard to find something to find him guilty of? I mean, normally in politics, there are skeletons in everyone's cupboard. And the president,
yeah,
we know, holds the keys to a lot of people's secrets, which is probably one of the reasons why the NEC are so toothless against him, because everybody knows that he probably knows everything they're doing, who they're sleeping with, what they've got, who they've done deals with. But here's Pravin, and he's really got a very clean record.
Yeah, he does. I mean, you know, we haven't discussed this, but there was a report yesterday that SARS is now reviewing all contracts that Pravin signed in his tenure as head of SARS between 1999 and 2009. This is how desperate this attempt is, that we're now going to look at every single contract that he did until we find something that he might have done wrong. What kind of organization has the time to go back 16 years?
Well,
because
especially
they want to find the dirt on one person.
Especially at a time where we're all paying provisional tax and they've got more important things to worry about, like the fact that the tax base is shrinking.
The fact that in the first 6 months they missed their target of the money that they have to collect. So you would think that that would be the priority because, well, if they collect better and more, then maybe fees must fall would not be an issue because we could afford to pay for those poor students to go to university without compromising quality and standards at those institutions. So, you know, it's remarkable. The man is incredibly, you know, we need to, there are some shining lights in our administration. The South African Revenue Service was one of them. People who worked hard, people who turned an institution that was pretty much nothing into an amazing world-class, world-lauded institution. this was a time when Pravin Gordhan was at the head of it. And we mustn't forget just how amazing and incredible that was for South Africa. There's the National Treasury, there's Public Protector Tuli Madonsela. There are others here and there which are amazing institutions. SARS was one of those institutions. And we need to be careful that now what is happening does not taint that reputation, but we are in danger of that becoming the reality.
All right,
given what's going on,
we need to look at this very blatant attempt now to grab hold of all the state-owned enterprises. Again, let's take a completely objective view of this. Let's imagine the president has the best interests of the country and the state-owned enterprises at heart, and he reckons there's been enough wasted money, there have been enough failures in state-owned enterprises, and he now personally wants to supervise them into health. Is there any possibility that this is what he means?
I don't like the laugh in your voice.
No, you were the one who laughed. I'm trying to be as objective as possible here.
We don't like your laugh in response to Gareth's laugh.
Yes, exactly.
Justice.
How dare you?
Okay. There are many state-owned enterprises that we don't even talk about. There are upwards of 300 state-owned enterprises. And so the ones that we don't talk about, many of them are good, solid institutions that continue to run. There are state-owned enterprises that are in the news all the time. Eskom has its problems. We'll put it aside for now. But we need to point out that Eskom has gone out of its way to sign coal contracts with the Gupta-owned Tegeta Exploration Company to pay that company half a billion rand advance when there was absolutely no pressure for it to acquire coal, particularly from there. But hey, you know what? We will give you half a billion rand because you're owned by the Gupta family and, the president's son too. Now, this is where the big problem lies with all these state-owned enterprises coming under the leadership of Jacob Zuma, because Jacob Zuma seems to essentially want to run these state-owned enterprises for their happiness and edification of several people. The Gupta family, for example, has done deals with Danel, with Eskom, has tried to do deals with SAA. Essentially, these are attempts to take government money and government contracts and give them to friends and family. And this is dangerous because once it becomes the norm that to get a contract, you have to go to the president who instructs a state-owned enterprise to pass the work your way, it's now a cartel. It's now loot and eat as much as you like.
But Justice, don't you
at SAA are so clear that for 3 years you haven't had a CEO, or you've had acting CEO after acting CEO. You've had only one person remaining, and that is a friend of President Zuma's, a person who is the head of the Jacob Zuma Education Trust. And so it's as clear as daylight that what we are seeing is a grab for the safe in South Africa, and that grab has several elements to it. Get rid of Pravin Gordhan or destabilize him at the finance ministry. Grab hold of the state-owned enterprises and make sure that the approvals and everything else can be done via the presidency rather than elsewhere. And then Bob's your uncle. You are sitting on the money. It is 31 months to go until the end of President Zuma's term as president of South Africa in 2019.
Right.
And in
right.
these 31 months, basically, you'll remember the title of the book by Michaela Rong, and it's called It Is Our Turn to Eat. And mm-hmm. I think this is what South Africa is about to go through now.
Well, Justice, there are a couple of questions from people here, and I want to throw some of these at you, and let's see what we can do about them. But really, it does sound like he's doubling down. It's like the president is saying, fine, after these elections, I can see the writing's on the wall. It's just a matter of time. So while I'm still here, I'm going to take what I can. This is a very risky strategy, though, because it could backfire horribly, and he could find himself in a much more tight spot by the end of this year, next year. But in time, everything will turn against him. I mean, it seems already that he's not in the position that he was in a year or two ago when he was fairly secure. Am I right about that, or am I living in cloud cuckoo land?
You're living in cloud cuckoo land. If you remember, Vladimir Putin came to the end of his term as the head of Russia. And at that point, he stepped down and a democratic election took place and someone called Medvedev took over.
Yeah. Who was
Medvedev
a stooge.
Was in power for one term, and then ta-da, there was Vladimir Putin back as at the head of Russia, therefore giving him two terms, one in which a puppet was in place, and then he was back as the big man in charge. What
right.
we are going to see over the next 18 months will be a concerted effort for someone else to take over from President Zuma. In fact, the ANC Youth League was very interesting this week. It issued a statement saying, we need an early elective, quote, elective conference of the ANC for the sake of renewal and so forth and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, imagine that there is an early conference and it decides that, you know what, we need a new leader for the ANC.
Right.
If you look at the landscape right now, there is only one person who's going to win that election, and it will be Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma. Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma will be supported by exactly the bloc that jumps up and down to support President Zuma at every turn. I will quote you some of them. Kebi Maphatswe, the man who was found guilty by the courts for lying about Ronnie Castells, is a big supporter of a new leader in the ANC, and that it should be a woman, and it should be Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma.
Right.
So there are about, 86 votes at that conference from the Kebi Maphatswe Veterans League. The ANC Youth League, which is making this call, well, we know where they're going. They want a woman president. The KwaZulu-Natal ANC, the ANC Women's League, which doesn't stand for women, but for Jacob Zuma, we know how they're going to vote. Then you have all the other provinces, Free State under Ace Magashule, Northwest under Supra Mahumapelo, Mpumalanga under Didi Mabuza. It's a clean sweep already. So the dangerous strategy for President Zuma that you ask about, it's not dangerous at all. In fact, now he'll be free to do other things while an ANC president who is beholden to him and his power block will be in charge and will be protecting him. So it's all good.
Zahir asks, where is Cyril in all of this, Justice?
Good question. Cyril Ramaphosa is sitting there waiting for Jacob Zuma to say, oh, Cyril, you're a nice guy, you can become president. It's never going to happen. Cyril Ramaphosa has essentially disappointed many of the people who thought, how shall I put it? Many of the people who...
Are you all right there, Justice?
Yeah, essentially, many people invested. Let me take you back to January 2013. In January 2013, the rand was strengthening nicely. Excuse me. The rand was strengthening nicely. Fitch Ratings issued a statement saying South Africa is back, because after the first 5 years of Jacob Zuma's time as president of the ANC, where it was almost leaderless, we now have a business leader who is who's looking good, who is saying all the right things, and we believe that the NDP is going to be implemented. It's going to be fantastic. What has Cyril done been since then? He's been Jacob Zuma's runaround boy. Send him to Sudan, send him to Lesotho, send him here, there, but keep him out of the country. He's just, Cyril Ramaphosa was whitewashed. He was brought in to make Jacob Zuma look like a real leader and to keep the ratings agencies from the door. And he has disappointed hugely. He has failed to stand up. He has failed to stand up this week and say what is happening with Pravin Gordhan is an absolute outrage. And actually, this question is a top-notch question. Where is Cyril Ramaphosa in all this? He is hiding. He is essentially doing what he's been doing since the December 2012, and that is to defend Jacob Zuma and not be his own man. This is exactly why he's losing the battle to lead the ANC.
Kala wants to know, Justice, what should we be afraid of in the next 2 to 3 years that can be done by Zuma? Can they attack the Constitution, change the rules of the game to suit them better, or are we just looking at looting?
Kala shouldn't be very afraid, because we are... What's great about what's happening right now is that, sure, all these attempts are being made, but society is also changing. So one of the calculations that Jacob Zuma essentially is making is that, oh, you know, I can still go on as in the past. But look at the Fees Must Fall movement. They are setting a new South Africa. They are standing for a whole set of different beliefs, and they have power to change things. Think about those banking leaders who went and said, Jacob Zuma, what you're doing is wrong. Change the finance minister or else the rand will tank. And they got some success. So power no longer lies in one place. We are no longer this big monolithic entity. We are different. And so the powers that be will try to loot. They will also try to do other things. Remember the secrecy bill they tried to pass through to make sure that Gareth and Mabale never speak again? Yep. Well, it hasn't worked. They've tried to shut down the EFF in Parliament. It hasn't worked. They've tried all sorts of things, and they will continue to try. But I think technology, the fact that you and I are speaking over a medium which is not radio, is a totally different medium, and you have it on your phone or your laptop or however else you're getting to listen to us. The attempts to capture the SABC, well, those people will be on, other platforms. They'll be on Cliff Central. They'll be on Touch Central. They'll be on all kinds of other platforms. So the attempts can be made, but there's nothing to be afraid of. We, the people, will win this one because it's too open, this democracy. It's too big for them to shut it down. And there are too many eyes everywhere looking at all of us and saying, what are you doing here? And I think that's great.
All right. There are lots of other questions. We're not going to get to all of them today. But I do think that one of the things you wanted to touch on is Jesus has walked through Gauteng, clearly. That's what everyone is saying. So what is next in Gauteng? I mean, we've got mixed feelings about Herman Mashaba. Salim Simanga, slightly more generous feelings. But the DA have all their work cut out for them now, because if they don't prove that they can run these very, very complicated monsters in Gauteng properly, it'll all have been for naught.
Yeah, I think if the DA, for example, had 50% plus one, enough seats to outright control, then it would have been a bit easier. They don't have that. So the challenge is not just the running of these complex beasts. It's also, and this is important, it's also the relationship between the EFF and the DA and the ability of that relationship to transcend their own differences and for them to say, we are still going to run these municipalities in a way that benefits people and shows that some of the sloth, some of the sheer waste that we've seen is not repeated in city of Joburg, Tshwane, and Nelson Mandela Bay. So I think this is going to be a very important growing phase for both the DA, which needs to realize that being a capitalist is not the be all and end all. You also need to make sure that people have opportunity, have jobs, have services. Poor people have those things. And we can't always say, oh, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats in the lake. So it's absolutely key for them to be magnanimous in everything they do so that they can work with the EFF. The EFF needs to realize that it's not in power. It's got 8% or 10% in some of these municipalities, and that it don't always get its way. At the moment, there is no formal agreement between these two, and that's very dangerous. There's no working arrangement. There's no understanding. The only thing was the EFF saying, I will help vote for your guys because I hate the other guys so much, I'm going to keep them out of power.
Right.
And that is something that needs to be fixed, because a loose arrangement like that where you vote Herman Mashaba in, but then you frustrate every little thing that he tries to do, is not healthy for the EFF, it's not healthy for the DA. But crucially, it's not healthy for all of us as citizens of Johannesburg, Tshwane, Nelson Mandela Bay. So this is where the crucial bit will come in. And it's going to be interesting whether these parties mature enough to take this to the next level and become proper.
Justice, one last thing. Can we put on the agenda for next week to discuss the Oilgate scandal? A lot of people are asking about that. Oilgate, and I'm sure we'll have plenty of other stuff to talk about next Thursday. But thank you very much. Okay. Cindy wants to know what the hell you're doing. Are you in bed right now? Because she can hear all kinds of noises.
What's Cindy doing in my stuff?
Justice is lying completely naked in the bed in a hotel in Cape Town. He's not interested in you.
I have prepared to turn on the camera on the Skype call so that you can all see that, as usual, I'm in my suit and tie at my desk.
All right, Justice, we'll see you next week.
And anyway, I won't send you a selfie of my, you know. Yes.
Not like that woman.
Adelphi, Justice. Yeah. Yours would be Adelphi.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. Thanks so much,
thanks,
guys.
Thanks, Justice. Bye-bye. There we go. Justice Malala, everybody. He's lying in bed in a hotel in Cape Town, giving us the burning platform, as he does every week with some expert political analysis. You don't get much better than that.
This is CliffCentral.com.